Brilliant novels, groundbreaking nonfiction, evocative poetry, great books, and insightful conversations whenever you want them on the Talk of Iowa Book Club podcast. Pick the books that speak to you or read them all. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and it is almost time to do some planting. This hour, we'll talk about cool season crops like peas, lettuce, and spinach. We'll also learn how a cold frame, a simple structure, can help extend the growing season on either end. Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, will join us in a few minutes to answer your questions about the plants and trees in your life. But to start us off in the vegetable garden, Ajay Nair is here. He's also an associate professor of horticulture at Iowa State. Hello, Ajay.
Good morning, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here. And let's start with a definition of cool season crops. What are we talking about?
Yeah, so when it comes to vegetable crops, we primarily divide them into two categories, cool season and warm season. Cool season crops are the ones which prefer, you know, cooler weather or lower temperature to grow. And these would be, as you mentioned earlier, peas, lettuce, spinach, broccoli, cauliflower. And they tend to do, a little, I would say, poor when they're growing or maturing when the weather is really warm or hot. Whereas the warm season vegetables and some of them which we like the most, you know, peppers, tomatoes, eggplants, they love the warm weather. So in that case, we are talking about them being planted later in the season when the temperature is higher and they won't get affected by any cooler temperatures because they will suffer if they are planted too early in the season.
Well, and this week has been cold, not just cool. It's been cold this week. So when do we know it's time to plant cool season crops?
That's a very tricky question, Charity, and the answer varies depending on where in Iowa you are. For example, you know, southeast Iowa tend to get a little bit warmer earlier than central Iowa or as compared to northwest Iowa. So I would say between southeast and the northwest Iowa, there's a gradient of about 2 to 3 weeks in terms of planting. But typically, you know, for central Iowa, we are talking about middle of April to end of April to be more of an ideal time to plant some of these cool season crops. Although this time frame changes if, let's say, we have a warmer spring, although this year it feels like we have been going into spring and winter at the same time.
Yeah.
Last week it was cold, like warm, and this week cold. But typically middle of April would be a good time to plant your cool season vegetables.
And even if it's the middle of April, of course, we know that Iowa weather is unpredictable and we can still have a really hard late season freeze. So if you plant these cool season crops, should you also have kind of a backup plan to protect them if it's going to get really cold?
That will be a good idea and something that our listeners and gardeners should think of when they are getting into cool season vegetables. Yeah, it is okay maybe middle of April, but you know we can get frost almost till mid-May or maybe even 24th of May. So having some kind of a backup is a great idea, and some of the strategies which our listeners and gardeners and homeowners could use, you know, thinking about, and we'll talk more about it, we talk about the row covers, the hoop houses, the cold frames, those are kind of an insurance in case, you know, a bad weather hits later in the season.
Are cool season crops something that you can direct sow, or are these things that you need to start indoors?
It depends on type of vegetable or crop we are talking about. Crops such as spinach, leaf lettuce, they are typically direct seeded because their spacing is close by, and then you plant several rows of them together. So I would not, it is not economical to transplant them. Whereas there are some cool season vegetables that absolutely need to be transplanted, and in which case you have to grow the seedlings a bit in advance. Those would be broccoli, cauliflower, and in some cases, some of the head lettuces, where growers would grow the transplant 3 to 4 weeks and then transplant them outside.
Is it too late to start those seeds indoors if you haven't already done it?
It is not late. let's say if you were planning to plant broccoli, again, the ideal time is mid-April to end of April, and broccoli transplant usually takes about 4 to 5 weeks to grow. So let's say if we seed today, we still have 4 weeks, 5 weeks before we can transplant. So no, you are not out of luck. You can still grow your transplants and plant by end of April or beginning of May.
You mentioned a cold frame. Let's do some more definitions. What is a cold frame?
So cold frame is something very similar to like a small greenhouse. It is the, I would say, the simplest and the least expensive structure to protect your plants. So when you look at the definition, you can see many variants of it out there, but typically it's a wooden box or a frame which doesn't have a base, and you put it on top of your plant, and there is a lid on top of this frame which is clear, and that clear lid could be glass or it could be clear plastic. So what you are trying to do is you are creating or developing or designing a small mini greenhouse. So that would be a cold frame.
And this is something that it is a simple structure. So this is something that it's not going to be too expensive or too difficult for someone to just build this themselves, right?
That's true. I mean, if you have few 2x4s lying, so think of creating a frame or any kind of plastic, you know, a board which you have, and create a box-like structure and put maybe just a plastic, a clear plastic on top of it, that's a cold frame. Some folks get really, you know, into it and they design it to be more stronger, so they might use, you know, polycarbonate plastic to make it more durable and maybe use it year after year. But yeah, this is something is basically, you know, I would also not discount the other forms of cold frame, and that is like putting a milk jug, like removing the bottom of the milk jug and putting it on top of your tomatoes or pepper. That's also a cold frame. So again, there are many forms and variants of cold frame out there.
So if I wanted to build a cold frame, I mean, basically just a square on the ground with something over the top of it, how would I use that this time of year?
So cold frames can be used in different ways depending on the objective of your use. The first and the primary objective here is, you know, protecting the plants from the adverse weather. So kind of creating a protected environment so that the plants are not beaten up by the wind and the cold temperature. Cold frame also help to expand the growing season. So one is you are planting early. And a second is some of our warm season vegetables, for example, tomatoes and peppers, those transplants can be hardened off inside these cold frames. So the cold frame is not only helping our direct seeded plants to grow a little faster, but it can also be used as a storage area for hardening off warm season vegetables.
Okay. And when you're hardening off a warm season vegetable, we've talked about this a lot on the program. We talk about moving it out to indirect sunlight. So if you put it in a cold frame, even if you've got clear plastic over it, that's not going to burn the plant or expose it to too much light too fast?
Yeah, that's a good question. So that is why we have this lid which can be adjusted and opened, because if you keep the cold frame tight shut, the difference in temperature between outside and inside on a warm sunny day could be anywhere from 15 to 20 degrees. So absolutely, there is chance of, you know, burning some of the foliage of your plant. So it's good to prop it open a little bit, keep it warm. And if it's too bright, you can always put like a shade cloth or some kind of a shade on top so that these hardening off plants are not exposed to direct sunlight.
Now, of course, I know right now, Ajay, everybody is eager to plant something. So these cool season crops are always a very exciting thing to plant because it's the thing that we get to plant first. But we also, okay, maybe we start that mid to late April. We also have to know when to stop, because a lot of these things are things that you would seed again and again, because with lettuce or spinach, you want multiple crops of that. So how do we adjust for when the weather gets too warm for these cool season crops?
Yeah, so good question, Charity. And again, it's a little, sometimes it's hard to stop yourself when you're planting and you see things coming up and you plant again and you keep going at it. With the cool season vegetables, we did an experiment actually last year with broccoli, and our planting date was mid-May. And that is almost a month later. And we did find that, again, that's not a good time to transplant broccoli. We were basically looking at varieties or cultivars that might do a little better. But again, all these broccoli that were planted in mid-May were maturing in first week of July or middle of July. And it was really hot. And the hot weather detrimentally affects the growth of the head of the broccoli. So for these cool season vegetables, although they are short duration, for example, you're talking about spinach and lettuce, they might be only like 30-day, 40-day crop. I think by middle of May, we should start transitioning to planting into warm season vegetables. So that's the latest I would plant. I would not go beyond that because it will affect the quality and the yield of the crop.
All right. And then, of course, we have to be fortune tellers again in the fall. But when can we start planting these cool season crops again toward the end of the growing season?
Yeah, and that's something which I learned the hard way. You know, when I moved here to Iowa, 1 year, you know, I planted my cauliflower. It was end of August. So it was specifically 24th of August is when I planted that cauliflower. And I harvested that cauliflower on November 9th. And even though, you know, 2.5 months, you know, August, September, October, maybe a little more, the size of my cauliflower head was just like a baseball. So I came to know, 24th August is really late. And so then talking to many of our growers in the state and conducting experiments at the research station, now I found, or I would recommend, not to plant later than end of July for most of the cool season vegetables. So that's the time when you can guarantee that there will be a crop and it will be a marketable size and it will be something which you look forward to as a normal crop. If you plant, if you start getting into August, then you are kind of taking a chance. There might be a year where things might be okay if you plant even middle of August. If the fall was mild, the crop will be okay, but then you're taking a risk. But if you don't want to take any risk, the ideal deadline would be end of July.
We are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. With me today, Ajay Nair. Cindy Haynes will join me in just a moment from the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University and Iowa State University Extension. And of course, you can join the conversation with your questions. Give us a call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. This is Talk of Iowa.
If you own a business or run an organization, consider using IPR as part of your marketing strategy. Let us show you how to reach our loyal radio audience, advertise on our digital platforms, and even sponsor your favorite podcast. Spread the word about your business and support IPR at the same time. It's a win-win. Learn more at iowapublicradio.org/sponsors.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions. You can call 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we are going to be doing a membership drive next week, but I want to mention that we are offering an early bird drawing for the drive. Starting today, anyone who donates at iowapublicradio.org will automatically be entered to win a $500 gift card to Earl May Garden Centers. So something that might be of particular interest to Hort Day fans. Again, you can give at iowapublicradio.org. With me this hour, Ajay Nair, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. And Cindy Haynes is also here, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State. Hello, Cindy.
Good morning. What a beautiful day.
It is beautiful and almost time to plant things. So it's a very exciting time of year. And we already have a lot of people with questions. You can call us 866-780-9100. Let's start with an asparagus question from Paul. Hi, Paul.
Hi. I have two questions. My asparagus isn't showing up yet. that there is some bluegrass and brome grass that is invading the asparagus bed. Could I spray that safely with Roundup right now?
To answer your first question, the asparagus not showing up because it is still too early. I looked at the soil temperature today in the state of Iowa, and specifically for Ames, we are sitting at anywhere between 37 and 40 degree Fahrenheit at a 4-inch depth. So those spears are just starting to grow, and you know, within a few weeks, you will see them slowly sprouting up. So just hold on for a little bit more time. And with respect to Roundup, I would not spray it right now because those sprouts are just coming up, and if you spray something now, it is going to injure those. So just hold off on your weed management for now.
And Ajay, can I just interrupt here to ask you, how do you check soil temperature?
Good question. And this is for all our listeners. I know sometimes it might sound daunting of how do you know what the soil temperature is at 4-inch depth in Sioux City versus Iowa City or in Ames. So if you go to this website called MesoNet, M-E-S-O-N-E-T, if you just Google that, it's a network of weather stations all across Iowa, which is maintained here in the Department of Agronomy at Iowa State. So anybody can go log in there and look at the air temperature, the soil moisture, the soil temperature, we have different weather stations throughout Iowa, so look for a station which is close to you, and that's the easiest way to know what the soil temperature is.
Perfect, and I'm just about to tweet out that link. Now, Paul, you can ask your second question.
Yeah, I have an old grapevine, a Concord grapevine, that has not been attended to. It climbed on a nearby short or small tree and some weeds. But last year, I cut those all down, and those vines just grew on the ground. Is there a way that I could start one of those vines up on a trellis?
Paul, I'm not an expert on that, but I would say you should be able to train that vine onto a trellis. Cindy, what would you say?
Yeah, I would say you can do that. Concord's a really tough vine. It's a really tough grape and very vigorous, like most grapes are. So if you could establish a trellis nearby or a pergola, you can get it to grow up on that pergola or on that trellis. It will require regular pruning to kind of make sure that you have some good fruiting, because you probably want that fruit, and that's usually yearly pruning. But you could do that. Even an established grape, you just need to have something nearby and substantial that it could climb on.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Paul. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Carol is on the line next in Des Moines. Hi, Carol.
Hi. I have created some raised beds just out of lumber and junk around the house, so they aren't very high. I wondered, because I just placed them on my lawn, should I dig down within the raised bed to kind of remove the grass that is within the bed?
Cindy, why don't you tackle that one?
Go ahead, Ajay.
No, yeah. So I was just going to ask a follow-up, how high are these raised beds right now?
Oh, 5 inches.
Uh-huh. Okay. I mean, I can start, Cindy, and you can chime in.
Sure.
So 5 to 6 inches is typical, even for commercial production, when we have raised beds. So even that 5 to 6 inches will give you better drainage. It will also give you a slight increase in the soil temperature. Mm-hmm. As long as you fill that 5 to 6 inches with nicely with whatever media you're using, and definitely some compost, it should be okay not to kill that grass, because the grass will eventually die. Although, you know, I typically, when I create the raised bed, if I can scrape the bottom of the soil and kind of loosen the soil, that will help for the roots to penetrate even deeper. So that will help. Cindy, you want to add something?
Yeah, so if you can kind of just kind of loosen that up just a little bit, you don't have to remove all of the grass, but loosen it up just a little bit so that the roots can penetrate, and then make sure you're using a really good compost kind of soil mixture when you're adding it in. And then that 5 or 6 inches of that soil compost mix, you know, that you're growing in will essentially block all the light so that the grass really doesn't grow through it. You might see a few pieces of grass peeking out along the edges, but they're usually pretty easy to pull. So you don't have to worry about killing the grass totally. You don't even have to put like a mat or plastic or anything down. Just kind of loosen it up a little bit if you can. And if you can't, it will still survive as well. So the plants will be fine.
You have made my day. How much easier my life will be.
Oh, good. Good.
Awesome.
Thanks a lot for your call, Carol. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Mara Lee is on the line next in Cedar Rapids. Hello, Mara Lee.
Hi. I have to chime in on the Concord grape thing earlier. Mine was completely downed by the derecho, but I had it about 5 years, and I had managed to get it to climb clear up over one of those archway trellises, and it had embedded itself in my lilacs and was climbing to my rooftop.
Oh, wow.
Concord grapes will grow well. Mine was flattened, like I said, in the storm, and I'm still waiting to see signs of life. Also relating to the derecho, I'm here in Cedar Rapids. I lost my tree, and around my tree, I have some bluebells that I'm very sentimentally attached to, and they're looking beautiful right now. I don't know when Cedar Rapids is going to come around and rip out tree stumps. This was a city tree.
Right.
So, you know, they showed up on January 7th and chopped down my tree, totally unexpected, in the middle of winter. I don't know when they're going to yank out my stump, and I'm very concerned about preserving my bluebells, and I'm wondering about timing on trying to transplant a bunch of bluebells.
Right. So if you can, so ideally the perfect time to transplant these bluebells is right after they're through blooming and right before they kind of go dormant for the season. But that's the best time. However, if they do come in and kind of rip out the tree trunk, they might take some of the bluebells with it. So moving them at, you know, if that means you have to move them then, move them then. Just get as much of the root system as you can. Find a new place for them as quickly as you can and water them in. Bluebells are tough enough to take it. It's just, you might sacrifice a few blooms for this year, but they're tough enough to take it. And you can start them somewhere else. And if you want to ensure that happens, because these are sentimental, as they come up, you can dig up just a little piece and take it to a new location. So you have that
they're
backup.
They're already pretty well up and forming buds.
Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah, they're looking real good.
Yeah. Yeah, and it doesn't take much to get them started again, so you're going to be okay. Just if you can wait until it's after it's done blooming and they're, you know, that they're starting to look like it's time for them to go dormant again, that's the perfect time to move them.
Okay, great to know, and cross my fingers on my grapes.
Yeah.
All right.
Good
Thanks
luck.
So much.
Thanks a lot, Marilee. And Cindy, before we move off the topic of bluebells, you know, now they're next to a stump. And of course, bluebells love to be in a shaded area.
Yeah.
So are her bluebells at risk because of that?
They could be scorched a little bit, especially when we have a really hot, sunny day, because they're not used to, you know, having kind of this full sun environment. Once again, bluebells are tough. That won't kill them. It just might make them look a little bit bad this year. When she transplants them or moves them, I would suggest putting them back into a part shaded situation, even if it's just, you know, afternoon shade from a building or some other plant that will provide some shade. They have a tendency to do a lot better when they have some kind of afternoon shade.
All right, let's do a few email questions here. This one's from Linda. She says, deer ate the tops off of 3-inch tall tulips a couple of weeks ago. They're still growing, and the interior part where the bloom emerges looks like it might have recovered on about half of them. Will they still bloom or just have nice tulip leaves?
The deer do a great job of eating tulip flower buds. So that's what you're going to check for. And if you don't see any kind of buds coming up in the next couple of weeks or month, I guess it, if it's a late blooming tulip, then you're just going to have nice foliage and not so nice blooms or no blooms. They ate so early that they, you know, there might be some of the buds that are still coming up, especially because usually I don't have tulips up in my garden just yet, and I don't have the buds up yet. So if they ate anything, I'm guessing that they ate some foliage and not the flowers. So fingers crossed, I would protect them. So do something to kind of protect them so that they can make sure that they have these kind of flower buds if they do have them coming up. Because apparently tulips are really popular with deer,
with deer, yeah,
and rabbits. Yeah. So, yeah.
All right. Here's a question from Lori in Waverly for you, Ajay. I have some Norland potatoes left over from those I grew last summer. They've started sprouting, and I'm wondering if I can use these as seed potatoes this year.
So, Laurie, yes, you can use, but again, this is a very, you know, interesting time of our call today because the Good Friday and the tradition of planting potatoes on Good Friday. So, I would say wait on planting. Although, you know, it's quite tempting because of the garden tradition of planting on Good Friday. There is no scientific evidence that, you know, planting on Good Friday will get you bigger plants or, you know, larger tubers. So please don't. But the more scientific way of doing that is, again, to go back to that Mesonet information and look when the soil temperature is at or above 45 degree Fahrenheit. So for Ames, as I told you today, it's between 37 and 40. I would not plant today. But as soon as the temperature starts going up and it gets to 45 and above, that's the time to plant your potatoes.
All right. But she can go ahead and use those sprouts.
Yes.
Great. This is from John in Iowa City. He's got two questions, Cindy. He says, first, I've seen lawn service advertisements for liquid aeration. What is this, and how does it compare with physical or mechanical aeration? Do you know?
I have no idea.
Okay, we'll save that for a turf grass week.
I would be suspicious of that. So I don't think anything can compete with that kind of physical aeration. So,
all right.
But yeah, but I'm interested. We'll have to ask our, we'll have to ask Dr. Tomes that one.
All right. And then second one, a couple of weeks ago, there was a question about a lower grade fertilizer that's a byproduct of processing agricultural grains. What was that fertilizer?
There is corn gluten that's out there.
Yes, I think they were talking about, I want to say, char?
Oh, biochar.
Biochar, mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So there's a couple of them. So biochar is another kind of amendment that has some evidence of helping in poor soils. So we did do some tests of biochar at some of the home demonstration gardens around, and just to see if it increased yield on some of our home vegetable crops. And Ajay can chime in here too. I think that the evidence is that it works really well if you have very poor soils, but there's not as good evidence of increase in, you know, plant performance in good soils, which many people have in Iowa, some pretty decent soils. So Ajay, yeah. Do you know about biochar?
Yeah, I would agree with Cindy. We use biochar in a couple of our experiments, and there's one ongoing right now focusing on commercial application, higher rates in peppers and carrots and cauliflower. And what we found is it's too early to say any evidence of substantial increase in yield. It definitely changes the carbon dynamics in soil because, you know, it's basically carbon. And so it will help in the long term soil quality, mm-hmm. and health. And that's where Cindy mentioned about depleted soils, you know, for them definitely, but it cannot be considered as a fertilizer. It's basically an amendment that adds, uh-huh. carbon, which is a limiting source for many of the microbes that grow in the soil. So one way you are improving the soil quality and health by adding biochar.
All right. And Cindy, here's one for you from Lynn in Iowa City. I would like to plant a moon garden in a part shade area. What plants do you suggest? And what is a moon garden?
So a moon garden is a garden or an evening garden that kind of the flowers open at night. So there's moon vine, datura, there's a few others, 4 o'clocks that kind of open late in the day and into the evening. They're usually white flowering plants. They're usually very fragrant, so they attract like moths and butterflies as their pollinators. And it's a nice thing to have around a deck or a patio when you know you're going to be, you know, out there in the evening in the summer. Most moon gardens have a lot of annual plants and some annual vines, like that moon vine, which is fantastic. But most of those annual plants need some sun. Mm. So they said part shade. If it's getting afternoon sun, no problem. This will be fantastic. If it's just a little bit of morning sun, then things like the moon vine maybe won't be quite as vigorous. The 4 o'clocks will do okay, but things might be a little more leggy and maybe not quite as vigorous. But a moon vine's a great idea, especially for those places you're going to be sitting around in the evening sipping some adult beverage in the middle of summer.
All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. Cindy Haynes and Ajay Nair from Iowa State University today with me, and you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions, 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa.
The way you get your news may have changed during this pandemic, but you still need to know what's going on in our state every day. IPR News has you covered. Subscribe to our new podcast, Here First, and start your day equipped with the essential local news you need to know, delivered in under 15 minutes, weekdays by 7 a.m. Get analysis from IPR's team of reporters. Learn about what's going on at the Statehouse and on the ground in your community. Subscribe to Here First today, wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. We do have a fun drive coming up next week. You start to hear those messages a little bit more often. And I do want to mention that we have an early bird drawing for the pledge drive starting today. Anyone who donates at iowapublicradio.org will automatically be entered to win a $500 gift card to Earl May Garden Centers. With me today, Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, Ajay Nair, same title, and they are here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call, or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we've got a lettuce question for you, Ajay, from Sarah in Clive. Hi, Sarah.
Hello.
Hi. What's your question?
So I recently got to take home some lettuce from my DMAC horticulture program. And I'm growing it in containers. And so I was wondering how I should harvest it so I'm able to have more grow and then I can harvest again.
So I believe this is a head lettuce since you have planted them in a pot. Am I correct?
So it's an Asian lettuce.
Okay. Okay.
I believe it's loose leaf.
It's a loose leaf. Okay. Yeah, so if it's loose leaf, it's already in a pot, you know, I would not transplant it anywhere. I would just keep it in the pot, make sure you water it nicely and also fertilize it. Lettuce do need nutrients as they grow. And the leaf lettuce, typically you can harvest them at least 2 to 3 times. So when you see that leaf has reached the desired size, some folks want to harvest it when the leaves are larger as compared to smaller. It's depending upon your choice. But when it gets that size, you can take a scissor, because this is a small, you know, in a pot, and just cut the leaves which you want, and make sure you keep watering and maintain those plants, because you might be able to get 2 or 3 more cuts out of it. So have it in a place where there is direct sunlight. There should be drainage in the medium. So I believe the pot, there's a hole at the bottom which drains. And one mistake or one issue that often props up when you're growing plants indoor in a pot and later on you might move it out, is that people start watering too much. So make sure you don't water too much. Let the media, let the soil dry a little bit and then water. Because if you keep it oversaturated, those roots won't grow, and that will detrimentally affect the growth of the plant.
Okay. And so is there any particular way to cut it so that it grows afterwards? Is there like a crown or something that I should avoid?
Yeah, I would say just cut, leave about an inch to inch and a half at the bottom and cut. This is the question is more relevant to another, you know, some other leafy vegetables like tatsoi, which is also has an Asian origin. It's actually from the brassica family, but it grows as a whorl. So you cut, you leave about an inch at the bottom and you cut the entire leaf from the top, and from that whorl, central whorl, more leaves will start coming up. So as long as you leave that one and a half inch, that gives enough leaves enough material in there for the plants to keep growing.
All right. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for your call, Sarah. Good luck with that. David is up next in Mount Vernon. Hi, David.
Hello. This is David calling from, I was supposed to say, Dean Borg's hometown.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. We always love to hear from Mount Vernon.
And I have a question about strawberries. And right now, they're in a bit of a raised bed covered with straw. Uh-huh. When can I remove the straw?
You're gonna wait to remove that straw until the last possible moment, because you want to protect those flower buds that have already formed from any kind of late freezes or frost that we might have for another couple of weeks. So you're gonna check on them. You're gonna kind of look, tuck under them and trying to check on them. So when the strawberry plants are started to emerge and they're looking a little yellow, like they really need some sun, that's when you're going to remove the straw. Usually this is somewhere around mid to late April. So I think you probably have another couple of weeks before you have to start removing that straw, and use the straw to kind of put around the plants to help control the weeds, and just in case you need to cover them up for another kind of frost that we might have sometimes in April, then that will help protect them. Those flower buds that strawberries have that they initiate in the fall, those produce the largest fruit in the kind of summer. So you really want to make sure you don't kill them, because then you're kind of reducing your harvest quite a bit. So if you can wait a few more weeks, your strawberries, you might have a better strawberry crop.
All right. Thanks. Hard to resist on a day like this.
I know. It is. And it's going to be really tough a couple of days this week. But check on them so you know that they're there and they're doing well, and then tuck them back in for another week or two.
All right, David, thank you so much for your call. And here's a question from Allison. I'm going to tweak it a little bit, because she's wondering if you can recommend any local crop cage makers, because what she's seen online is a little bit pricey. But let's talk about maybe other options for crop cages, because I know you guys probably don't have anybody that you could recommend specifically. But do you have an idea for maybe an inexpensive alternative or recycled way to make crop cages to protect raspberry bushes or something like that?
So I've seen people that have used, you know, pieces of old fencing or, you know, cattle panels kind of, that they could use just kind of for raspberry cages. You're just kind of lifting them up and you're kind of protecting them from deer and rabbits. I've even used before yarn between stakes, just kind of colorful yarn to kind of create this temporary fence. Ajay, any ideas?
Yeah, I think nowadays you can get more flexible fencing material, which is easy to, you know, move around. I think that is a good idea, which is quick and easy to install.
Right. You can even use snow fencing. You know, we may be done with that for a while, so maybe you just have that. It's very attractive, but and brightly colored. But there's lots of options. I've used some large tomato cages before, you know, upside down, to help support one or two raspberry plants that I thought were a little too floppy, but that was more supporting right. the the plant than it was protecting it. So get creative. Get a kid on this one. They're the ones that could really come up with the ideas. And look what's in the garage. Look what's in the shed. And have them design something for you, kind of as a protecting the raspberry crop. So I like that idea.
All right. Well, good luck with that, Allison. Mm-hmm. Maybe if a kid is listening right now with great ideas, you can call us. Start your own business.
Yeah.
Here's a question from Stephanie. I have a locust tree that's about 40 to 50 feet tall. A couple of years ago, it lost a huge branch in the wind. The branch was rotten inside. Does this mean the trunk will have rot in it also? And how can I assess if the tree is sound?
Right. It's hard to assess the health of a tree without actually getting up there and kind of into the tree, especially if the branch that was lost was higher up. I will say that there are trees that can have hollows or can hollow out inside and be perfectly sound. So I think if this is an important tree, if it's a large tree, if it's a tree close to a house or a parking structure or garage or your car where it could fall on something and could be harmful and hazardous, then I would say maybe having a certified arborist come out and take a look at it so that they could have an assessment techniques that they do, and they can take a look at it and tell you if this is a hazard tree or not. And that's what you want to know. If it's not a hazard tree, then you're okay. Then it's going to be around, even though it had a hollow branch. That's just going to be a hollow that a bird or some other wildlife will use in the future. So you've created a new house for some wildlife, and that's fine. Or it could be something more serious that maybe needs to be removed. So, and only an arborist or someone who can, take a real close inspection of the tree itself is going to be able to tell you that.
All right. Here is a question for you, Ajay, from Roger. What is your recommendation on when to plant Brussels sprout seedlings if I want a fall harvest? We're looking way ahead.
Yeah. So many of the Brussels sprout cultivars or varieties which we grow here in the state are anywhere from 90 to 120 days. So 3 to 4 months for them to grow. If you plant the Brussels sprout now, sometime in the coming weeks, you will be harvesting them way early. And so I would suggest waiting on that and harvest and transplanting a Brussels sprout somewhere end of May, beginning of June, so that your plants are getting ready to be harvested in the fall. There's another reason for doing that, and that's Brussels sprouts are sweeter when they are exposed to a frost before they are harvested. So if you harvest too early before a frost comes, you might not get that, a sweet Brussels sprout which you're looking for. So try to time it such that it at least gets one frost so that, the quality is better and you will plant Brussels sprout again and again in the coming years.
All right. Maybe even the kids will eat them. Ralph is on the line next in Iowa City. Hi, Ralph.
Yeah, I have a quick question. I have about 50 evergreens. I think they're arborvitae on property. And no matter what I seem to do, I can't keep the deer away from them in the winter. The top, they're probably 10 feet tall. The top 5 feet are great. And then the bottom 5 feet every year seem to get eaten by the deer, which I don't begrudge them, but I'm just curious if there's something out there. I've seen motion detector sonic things on the internet. I've seen spray, bottled spray that you can put on the evergreens. I'm just curious if there's anything that you recommend to proactively prevent the deer damage each winter.
Right. The arborvitaes are like the dessert buffet line for deer in the winter. They really do like them, and they will eat. You can tell it's deer because they will eat just what they can reach into the ground, and everything that they can't reach is usually just fine. The best way to protect them is probably making sure they can't get to them. So it's a exclusionary fencing around them so that they can't get to those really tender green shoots or leaves that they love to eat so much. So Irish, you know, soap, different sprays, all of those things that might work temporarily, but they're so used to eating these plants now, so they know where they are. They're going to keep coming back year after year. So in the fall, before they start needing that as a food source, I would put up a pretty substantial fence around these arborvitaes. And you're going to have to do this probably every fall throughout the winter for the next few years so that they don't see this as a food source anymore. Sorry to say, that's probably your best option.
All right, Ralph, sorry. Thanks a lot for the call. Mm-hmm. Terry's on the line in West Des Moines. Hi, Terry.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I have a couple older river birch. They're probably close to 30 years old. And I had problems probably 15 years ago that the leaves turned yellow and they got pretty barren looking. And it was recommended that I put iron around the drip line under the trees. And so I have done that every year now since then, and they look great. The iron that I was using was the root feeder iron, and mm-hmm. I cannot find those root feeder iron pellets anymore.
Mm. Yeah, mm-hmm. So if you can check with Earl May. You might be able to check online. This is something your tree's probably going to need regularly to kind of stay nice and green. You could also add a little sulfur. Part of this problem is because your soil pH is pretty high and iron's not available. So you could add some like elemental sulfur this year to try and lower the pH because there's probably enough iron there. It's just tied up. And if you lower the pH, it might become available. And that may be a short-term fix until you can find that kind of iron. Or you're also looking for chelated iron, which is also sold in a liquid form too, that you might be able to apply as well. So there's other options that you can use. But I would, if this is working for you, I would try and find that first and then have a backup plan of sulfur to kind of lower the pH or look for another source of kind of chelated iron for those acid-loving plants like river birch.
Yeah, and just to add to Cindy's point here, when you add elemental sulfur, you start bringing the pH down, but that doesn't happen immediately.
No.
Elemental sulfur has to be broken down by the soil microorganisms, and it typically takes anywhere from 6 to 8 months for that pH right. to come down. So if you do it now, so you're looking forward to a result in another 6 to 8 months. So oftentimes people would do that in the fall so that by the spring it's ready. But in this case, since it's a tree, you can do now, and within a few months you will start seeing that pH slowly coming down and iron being more available.
All right, Terry, thanks so much for your call. Let's slip in one more fast question from Jim. Is it okay to prune my roses now? I live in northern Marion County.
It should be fine. If they're starting to bud and starting to emerge, I might wait, but I'm guessing that's not happening at most places, so go for it.
All right. And he also wants to know when the ideal time is to apply crabgrass control fertilizer.
Crabgrass preventer and fertilizer is usually applied as the forsythia flower buds start to drop. So anywhere from now until like the middle of April. So, because my forsythia is blooming right now.
All right, that makes it sound so romantic.
It does. It does. That's our timing. Yep.
Cindy Haynes, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And Ajay Nair, thank you.
Thank you.
Cindy Haynes and Ajay Nair are associate professors of horticulture at Iowa State University. Of course, we will be back again next Friday with Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. We also have a pledge drive coming up next week, and we're offering an early bird drawing starting today. Anyone who donates at iowapublicradio.org will automatically be entered to win a $500 gift card from Earl May Garden Centers. Thanks to Paul in Ankeny and Mary in Johnston who gave this hour and were entered in that drawing. Have a wonderful weekend. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa.